Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Alex Ritson, and in the early hours of November the 1st, these are our main stories. The US House of Representatives has voted on partisan lines to endorse the impeachment inquiry into President Trump, setting the rules for the next stage of a bitter political battle. A study of measles has found the virus has a devastating impact on the immune system, making it harder for the body to fight other infections. Also in this podcast.
Order! You really are a very overexcitable individual.
The end of an era, British politics says goodbye to one of its most distinctive voices, and a warning that the global outbreak of African swine fever could kill a quarter of the world's pigs. The process that could end in President Trump's impeachment is gaining momentum. The US House of Representatives has voted in favour of a resolution that sets the rules for the next phase of the inquiry into claims that he pressured Ukraine to investigate his political enemies. And members, divided on largely party lines, demonstrated a certainty that was unequivocal. The Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, said the impeachment inquiry would be fairly conducted, giving equal time for both sides, and would seek the truth. And she insisted its outcome was not predetermined.
This process, these open hearings, seeking the truth and making it available to the American people, will inform Congress on the very difficult decisions we will have to make in the future as to whether to impeach the president. That decision has not been made. That's what the inquiry will investigate, and then we can make the decision based on the truth. I don't know why the Republicans are afraid of the truth.
But the Republicans see it differently. Congressman Devin Nunes of California said the Democrats had a bizarre obsession with overturning the 2016 election that brought Donald Trump to power.
After spending 3 years trying to manufacture a crime they can attribute to President Trump, they've come up empty. First, they insisted that the president is a Russian agent. Then they claimed he's a money launderer and a tax cheat and a fraudulent businessman. And now they've decided they don't like the way he talks to foreign leaders. But they have no evidence and no argument to support impeachment. All they have is the unconditional cooperation of the media and their advance their preposterous narrative.
I got more from our Washington correspondent, Anthony Zerker.
It certainly is a significant symbolic moment. Here you have the House of Representatives voting to detail exactly how this impeachment inquiry is going to be conducted going forward. It's only the fourth time in U.S. history that something like this has happened. So it is a historic moment, although Democrats had said from the beginning that they didn't need a vote like this, that they could have done the impeachment inquiry without it. But what we've seen from the details of this legislation is that it's going to be much more public going forward. It's going to be handled in the Intelligence Committee, that some of the witnesses perhaps who have already testified behind closed doors are going to come back again and testify in front of the cameras, that members of Congress are going to have more time to question the witnesses, that some of the depositions we've already seen are going to be publicly released, that the White House is going to have some say, some ability to mount a defense during these hearings, and that there's going to be a report at the end of it that is handed over to the Judiciary Committee. That is the committee that's going to decide whether or not to formally offer articles of impeachment against Donald Trump. So it is it definitely has a lot of meaning, even if the Democrats will say that they didn't need to do this at all.
And the White House is furious. Does that mean that Donald Trump is worried?
I think he's worried that there is going to be an impeachment vote and that he might get impeached. I think he's still, if you talk to the White House, they're still fairly confident that if it goes over to the Senate, where there's a trial and a vote to remove the president, that they will win that. But simply being impeached would be a pretty dark mark on any presidency. So he is concerned about that.
But presumably also it could work the other way, because it might actually, this campaign against him might play quite well with his electoral base, and there's an election coming up.
That is true. And that was one of the concerns among Democrats going into this when they were somewhat divided about whether to start any kind of an impeachment inquiry. The polls, at least initially, have shown pretty significant support for at least the investigation, if not a vote for removal. So we'll see how it all plays out. But Republicans are still going to block the process and complain about the process being unfair. And the Democrats are going to keep moving forward.
Anthony Zerker. A BBC investigation has found Silicon Valley's tech companies are enabling an illegal online slave market. Domestic workers are being sold on Google and Apple apps as well as on Instagram. An undercover team in Kuwait found dozens of women workers and a child being sold for a few thousand dollars alongside TVs and cars. A UN expert on slavery said the investigation revealed a violation of slavery laws by the apps and app users. Jess Kelly has this report.
I'm calling about the maid you advertised on the internet.
Trust me, she's very nice. She laughs and has a smiley face. Even if you keep her till 5 a.m., she won't complain.
We're in Kuwait, undercover, investigating a booming black market in domestic workers. We arranged to meet a policeman who's selling us his khadama, or maid, using a popular commodity app called For Sale.
See you. Which floor?
She's African, right?
He's taking part in what has been called an illegal online slave market, facilitated by Silicon Valley's biggest tech companies.
What's her name?
Sarah. This is what we call her. I don't know what her real name is.
So holidays are a definite no-no?
Where would she go? It's impossible. It's never happened. No telephone or going outside. What if, God forbid, tomorrow she goes out and sleeps with someone?
Outside, over a cigarette, he discusses the app he's using to sell the worker.
I tell you, For Sale is dirty. Be careful with it. The passport, don't give it to her. You're her sponsor. Why would you give her her passport?
He's trying to sell us his domestic worker. He'd confiscated her passport and not given her a day off. All illegal in Kuwait. When we contacted him for comment, he sent us a laughing emoji. It showed how seriously he took our allegations against him. Over the course of a week, our undercover team spoke to more than 50 sellers.
Okay.
Does she take a holiday?
No, no, no. We Kuwaitis don't let them, to be honest. We're criminals.
And does the passport stay with us or with her?
I keep all my maid's passports. Why would she keep it? So that she can go to the airport and abandon me?
We arranged to meet a seller advertising an African domestic worker for $3,800. When we arrive, it's clear the girl is far younger than we were told.
Shall I tell you the truth? For my sake? She's 16. She got a pleasant face. She's kind. She won't say no to you.
We showed our evidence to Anne Abunda from Sandigan, Kuwait, an NGO that fights for the rights of domestic workers.
This is child labor, child trafficking. It's sad and disgusting.
Her organization has rescued thousands of women from abusive households. Anne advised us to take our video to the Kuwaiti authorities, who move the girl, who we'll call Fatu, to a government shelter. A few days later, Anne is allowed to meet Fatu.
She wants to go home, be with her family. They already tell the employers to bring all her things, all her bags.
2 days later, Fatu was deported back to Guinea.
What they are doing is illegal.
We showed our evidence to Amila Bula, the UN Special Rapporteur on Modern Slavery.
If Google, Apple, Facebook or any other company is promoting apps like these, hosting apps like these, they are promoting an online slave market.
Following our investigation, For Sale removed its domestic workers section and told us it would cooperate with the authorities to bring the perpetrators of the alleged crimes to justice. Facebook, which owns Instagram, told us,
following an investigation, we have banned the hashtag Maids for Transfer, as much of the content violated our policies. We also removed 703 violating accounts.
Haraj, the app used in Saudi Arabia to trade domestic workers, didn't respond to us. Both Google and Apple told the BBC that this type of behaviour has no place on their application stores and that they are working with app developers to better prevent illegal activity like this on their platforms.
Jess Kelly. Farmers in Asia have been forced to cull millions of pigs in recent months as they scramble to contain an outbreak of African swine fever. The disease is not harmful to humans, but is catastrophic for pigs. Now, the World Organization for Animal Health has warned that the continued spread of the disease could devastate the global livestock industry. Here's our correspondent, Imogen Folks.
We've seen in China, for example, that is the world's leading pork producer, millions and millions, possibly even 100 million pigs have died. Now, this is an illness for which there is no treatment and no vaccine. There are some being tested at the moment. It's a very, very complex virus, is nearly always fatal. And so, therefore, the only way of stopping it spreading is to contain affected herds and to cull the pigs. And this is why the World Organization for Animal Health is warning of the possibilities of the spread of this disease. It's already in 50 countries, Asia into Eastern Europe now, and it's very, very difficult to stop. You're already seeing in China, for example, some meat shortages and prices going up, and this could then impact around the world. There are other things we need to say about this, is that this is a virus which can stay in processed meat. And this is why it spreads so easily. You imagine somebody, for example, with a ham sandwich and then throwing it away, but it can still infect. It can stay in frozen meat. It can live in the vehicles which have transported infected pigs. So it's very, very difficult to stop.
Imogen Folks. And while the crisis grips China, it could mean big business for pig farmers in the United States, where the disease hasn't so far taken hold. Here's Jim Munro from the National Pork Producers Council in Iowa.
There's actually an unprecedented opportunity to export more pork to China. It is the world's largest pork-consuming nation. It's a staple of the Chinese diet. And we have seen increased exports despite the trade dispute that's been ongoing. We hope to see the permanent removal of punitive tariffs on U.S. pork that have been put in place because of that trade dispute so that we can help China deal with food price inflation and just meet the need for reliable sources of pork. There is no more reliable source of pork than the United States.
Jim Munro. For many people baffled by British politics and the seemingly never-ending saga that is Brexit, there's been one enduring voice of theatre and frustration. John Bercow stepped down as Speaker of the House of Commons on Thursday. During his decade in the role, he said, nearly 14,000 times. The catchphrase, often bellowed during unruly parliamentary debates, has helped give him a worldwide profile. The son of a taxi driver has used flowery language to cajole, corral and calm the 650 MPs in the lower house.
Order! Order! There's no good people shouting. There will be an opportunity for other points of order, but the Prime Minister must and will be heard. Order! Order! The Honourable Gentleman has got to learn the art of patience. And if he is patient, if he deploys Zen, he will find that it is ultimately to everybody's advantage. So we'll leave it there, and we come now. Now, I'm not... Oh, very well. Order! Order. There's simply too much noise in the chamber on both sides. Order! You really are a very overexcitable individual. You need to write out 1,000 times, I will behave myself at Prime Minister's questions.
But beyond the theatrics, what will his legacy be? Here's our political correspondent, Rob Watson.
The Speaker is there to defend Parliament. And I think in that sense, he has done two things which mark him out from previous speakers. I mean, I think he's taken his role much more seriously as the defending the rights of ordinary backbench, as they're called, MPs. In other words, MPs who are not part of the government. And he's done all sorts of things which government ministers have found fantastically uncomfortable, such as this sort of business of being of demanding that they come and urgently answer MPs' questions about the running of whatever bit of the government that it is that they're responsible for, which I think many MPs have thought has been a fantastic innovation. And I think he's also been very assiduous about basically making Parliament more outward facing, so realizing that you've got to sell it to the people and of course a wider audience abroad.
Rob Watson. Still to come in this Global News podcast.
What did you take to make you brave?
Heroin.
Heroin. And how much would you consume in a day?
5 pieces of it.
We hear from the Liberian underclass known as Zogos, former child soldiers who were drugged during the nation's civil war, and why the first women's wrestling match in Saudi Arabia has caused controversy. Research into measles has found the virus has a devastating impact on the immune system, making it harder for the body to fight other infections. The virus can cause immune amnesia, meaning the body forgets how to fight bugs it once knew how to beat. Scientists made this discovery after carrying out 2 studies on children from a Dutch religious community who aren't vaccinated, as our medical correspondent Fergus Walsh told me.
These children had never had the MMR vaccine, and they analysed their blood before they got measles and then after a big outbreak, and then analysed what effect the measles virus had had on their immune system. And they found that the measles virus, it wiped out the antibodies that those children had built up over the years naturally against a whole series of other infections. And it had also knocked out quite a lot of what's known as naive immune cells, these sentry cells that patrol your blood and bone marrow, waiting for new pathogens to come along. And it returned it to what they described as a baby-like state. Now, we'd known for quite a long time, anecdotally, that children who got measles were prone to getting other infections. But this, for the first time, explains the mechanism.
And this lack of immunity lasted for several years and put these children at serious risk from very dangerous diseases.
Potentially, yes. Now, what they didn't do, because it would have been unethical, was then deliberately give any infections to these children. But they did take some ferrets. Now, ferrets are the best animal model for flu. And they found that ferrets who'd got measles and who'd been immunised against flu then had their immunity wiped out. So the theory is that it also potentially does the same, not just with flu, but with a whole series of potentially childhood infections. And one of the researchers suggested that perhaps if you don't get immunised against measles, but you've been immunised against other childhood infections, it may indeed wipe those out for some time.
I'm assuming that most scientists would say the moral of the story is that you should get your children immunised against everything, including measles.
Absolutely, and that you should ensure that your child has had both doses of the MMR vaccine, because we are seeing a global resurgence of this very contagious infection.
Fergus Walsh. Born in a ghetto of the capital, Monrovia, Liberia's football star-turned-president, George Weah, promised to help disadvantaged youth. But 2 years into his 6-year term, he's struggling to revive a country that is one of the poorest in the world and is still traumatised by a civil war that claimed 250,000 lives. Unemployment is endemic, aggravated by the recent withdrawal of 17,000 UN peacekeeping troops. The spiralling exchange rate against the US dollar has sparked a hike in the prices of basic commodities, causing widespread hardship for millions of Liberians. As Lucy Ash reports, some resort to crime to survive, especially the underclass known as Zogos.
On the side of the road in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, a group of men are patching up old car tyres. Their clothes are filthy and their faces haggard. But they're trying to make ends meet in a city where many accuse them of being zogos, slang for thugs and thieves. These men are all former child soldiers. Sharif, the leader of the group, took up arms as a 13-year-old after his brother was killed by the rebels. He felt the only way to protect his own life was to become a fighter himself.
There were a lot of bad things that occurred during the war. Yes, bad things. And we were involved. I won't lie, I was involved. People lost their life. People had to die.
Sharif admits he's haunted by some of the atrocities he committed during the 14-year-long civil war. His commanders used to ply him with drugs just before battle, and he's been addicted ever since.
When you go on the front line, you got to be brave. So you have to use a substance that will make you brave to facing the enemy forces.
So what did you take to make you brave?
Heroin.
Heroin. And how much would you consume in a day?
5 pieces of it.
A day?
Yes, a day.
If you bring drugs into any country and you give it to young people who have no way of getting out of it on their own, I can say it's tantamount to murder.
That's Jewel Howard Taylor, Liberia's vice president. She was once married to Charles Taylor, the rebel leader, who got boys like Sharif hooked on drugs in the first place. But now her ex-husband is serving a life sentence for war crimes, she's recast herself as a scourge of the drug traffickers and champion of the downtrodden Zogos.
What I would like to see is a non-bailable charge so that people who bring in drugs and are caught with it are actually put in jail until the cases are finished. Second thing is that we're going to make a detox in a rehabilitation center. Government will have to provide some support because these are our citizens.
Festus Logan of the Liberian Refugee Repatriation and Resettlement Commission is trying his best to warn the government of the dangers ahead. Recently, a man on his way to church was killed for his $10 phone, and in retaliation, 4 suspected Zogos were lynched by an angry mob.
In 5 years' time, if nothing is done, if no program is in place, we might be sitting in our houses and being attacked by those individuals.
The drug addicts?
Oh, of course.
But if it's such an urgent problem and it means that there's a threat of violence to the whole community, why doesn't President George Weah make more funds available?
I'm sure it's part of his program, but again, here in Liberia, you're seeing the level of destitution. So the president is now faced with too many challenges, but we're trying to engage his office as well.
Some Zogos are planning to march on the parliament next month, demanding proper rehabilitation to help them leave the streets and turn their lives around.
Lucy Ash. The Islamic State group has chosen a new leader just days after its former number one, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, killed himself during a raid by US troops. The announcement was made by an Islamic State outlet on the encrypted messaging service Telegram, as our Arab Affairs editor Sebastian Usher reports.
This was a relatively brief and to-the-point audio message from IS, about 8 minutes long, confirming with Ethel Baghdadi and the previous spokesman for IS, and announcing the new leader, Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qureshi, that last name seeming to show that he's a direct descendant of the Prophet Muhammad, as Baghdadi claimed to be, and according to the way that IS reads Islam, that therefore makes him able to stand before Muslims around the world as the new caliph. Now, that's unlikely that he is going to be seen that way. And of course, IS is a much depleted force at the moment. We don't know much about this man. We don't have any pictures. We don't have a biography of him. He's described as a religious scholar. It will be interesting to see how much is put out about him, how much of a personality cult is made. We only saw, of course, Baghdadi once on video. Will we see more of this man, who will be operating in even more straitened circumstances than his predecessor?
Sebastian Usher. In recent years, Saudi Arabia has attempted to shake off its image as one of the most repressive countries for women. Saudi women still do not have the same rights as men, but new reforms now allow them to drive. apply for passports and travel independently. On Thursday night, the country hosted its first women's wrestling match. WWE star Natalia and Lacey Evans faced off in a pay-per-view match in Riyadh as part of a two-month entertainment festival. But many critics have criticised the match, with the Arabic translation of "We reject women wrestling in Saudi" trending on Twitter. I spoke to BBC Arabic's Hanan Razek.
It's been a mixed reaction. Some people are praising this move, are so excited about it. One of the famous male wrestlers in Saudi Arabia, his name is Mansoor. He has spoken about how his female members of his family are so happy and excited about this. However, on the other side, the more conservative part of the country, as we've been seeing in the last 2 years with every single change and difference happening in the country, they oppose it based on their own religious and more conservative narrative.
Which I guess you might expect, but it's not just the conservative critics who oppose it. Actually, some advocates of gender equality are against this idea too.
It's true, because, I mean, we know that it's very likely that they will be dressing modestly as a sign of respecting the culture and the traditions there. However, we see other women being punished because of their dress code or they were dancing. Like, for example, we heard about a young woman being investigated because she was dancing to hip-hop and rap music in front of other people, men and women, and she wears the niqab so her face is covered. And this triggered a lot of debate in the society because women's rights advocates feel that there is a double standard. It's not the same for foreign women as Saudi women. But also there is another very important point here, that they feel they are only now starting to enjoy their rights. And they feel that this is not the right time to have a debate like this over some issues sometimes that don't affect the majority of people. They feel that this is underestimating the women's issues. If you were keeping it only to something like how the wrestlers will be dressed or dancing or attending concerts, it's much deeper than this.
Hanan Razek. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address, globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Alex Ritson. Until next time, goodbye.